My guest at this time is Grace Marie Turner. She is president of the Galen Institute, one of the most respected healthcare policy organizations in the country. She joins us at all the major turning points in the healthcare debate. We've talked to her for many years now, and certainly throughout the Obamacare ups and downs, both legally and politically. And now, of course, it's the Republicans' turn to try and advance their repeal and replace strategy. It's known as the American Healthcare Act. We talked to Grace Marie about it on the day after the details were released, and now we've got a few more ideas of what's in it and where the political road may lead from here. So, Grace Marie, always good to have you with us, and especially in studio
today. I know. Nice to be here with you, Greg.
Well, first of all, let's start with the Republican division on this. We talked about this a little bit in our last interview, but several members from the House Freedom Caucus are essentially saying, we ran on full repeal, and replacement comes after that. This isn't that. Do they have a point? Is it just more of a what's politically feasible thing that leadership's after here? How do you read that divide?
Almost all of them ran on repeal and replace. Yes, they want to repeal Obamacare, but they also know they cannot leave their constituents exposed to not having coverage because they've repealed the law. So the repeal and replace really need to come together, primarily because it takes time for the health, for the states and the health insurance industry to respond to the new policies that would be offered in the American Health Care Act and to get that up and running. You want to create the lifeboat for people to be protected, both those on Medicaid as well as those with ACA exchange coverage, while this new bridge is being built to a new system. So they've got to do both at the same time. And those who are saying all we want to do is repeal the law first and worry about replace later are not respecting what their constituents are asking, but also those who say we want to repeal the whole law are not paying attention to the process, because there is no way that Senator Schumer, the minority leader of the Senate, is going to allow a repeal bill to get through the Senate with 60 votes. They need 8 Democrats. Not going to happen. The only way they can do this is through the budget reconciliation process that allows 51 votes, but it doesn't allow most of the regulations to be repealed in this law. That's going to have to come later through other measures. It's going to have to come if Republicans wind up getting 60 votes in the Senate in 2018, then they can repeal all the regulations. But they cannot do it now and get through the Senate parliamentarian in order to get this bill to the Senate, off the floor, and to the president's desk.
You mentioned last week that Secretary Price can deal with a lot of these regulations. So how much can he deal with, and how much has to be done through statute?
They're really already starting with addressing some of the regulatory authority existing in the Affordable Care Act to give states more options and to give people relief from some of the more onerous regulations. People can continue to keep policies that they're on now. They call it grandmothering. They first could grandfather their current policies if they had them before the ACA. Grandmothering means you can keep the policies that you had after the ACA. But there also are 1,400 places in this law. I did the Google search that says the secretary shall or the secretary may make changes. And they are looking at every one of those and thinking, how can we abide by the executive order that was the first executive order that President Trump signed when he came into office and came into the Oval Office on January 20th, was to give the secretary much more authority to be able to give people relief, people, businesses, individuals, relief from a lot of the regulations that have driven up the cost of health insurance, that have caused so many millions of people to violate the individual mandate and say, I'm not buying this insurance. I cannot afford a policy that costs more than my mortgage, and giving people some relief. Most of it has to happen through legislation, but the Department of HHS is going to look for opportunities to give people much more relief through regulatory policy.
Let's talk about process a little bit more, because it seems to me that at least on the surface, both sides of the Republican divide here have the same problem, because neither of them plans to do this all in one fell swoop. And based on the opposition to the way Obamacare was done, that's probably ideal. But the AHCA can use reconciliation to do this first part. But as we've discussed, it's a 3-part step. This bill, Tom Price dealing with some regulations, and then later bills to address perhaps purchasing health care insurance across state lines and other free market initiatives that critics from the conservative side say, well, you're going to need 60 votes in the Senate to do that too. On the flip side, like you've been mentioning, if conservatives want to do whole hog repeal, they might be able to do that through reconciliation, but then their replacement bill would also need 60 votes. So is either side going to ultimately get what they want here?
In politics, in this sausage-making process, nobody ever gets everything they want. And I think that's one of the things that you see happening now within the Republican caucus. They said, we control the White House, we control the House, we control the Senate. Why can't we get everything we want? Well, the process still allows, thank heavens, for deliberation and negotiation. And to respect the process of what people want, which is continued coverage, more affordable coverage, means that this is where they have to start. So yes, the Affordable Care Act, I believe, pushes as far as they could the limit of what they can get through with reconciliation. They already are moving the legislation to allow purchase of health insurance across state lines. That will pass in a separate measure. And I think that you very well may get some Democratic support for that. I think you could get Democratic support for repealing the Independent Payment Advisory Board, the what some people call the death panel in Medicare. And there have been many Democrats who have been opposed to that. So when you are talking about specific, discrete policy initiatives, they are going to look for those that can get enough Democratic support to get across the line. And frankly, they want to do that. They've been criticizing Democrats for 7 years for passing this bill through with only Democrat votes and not a single Republican vote. So the first measure very likely will have only Republican votes, but they're not going to end there. Obamacare was 2,000 pages of legislation followed by 40,000 pages of regulation. The American Health Care Act is a little over 100 pages. It's a much more discreet bill that's going to require follow-on legislation and regulatory relief, plus devolving a lot of power to the states and ultimately to consumers. So instead of grabbing power to Washington, they're really trying to diffuse power to individuals, to states, and ultimately to the health sector to give people more affordable choices, to give people more affordable coverage, and give them more of the options that they've been saying they want.
There certainly may be some red state senators who can go along with some of these other ones. It might even help their reelection efforts, especially from states that Trump won. But Chuck Schumer will obviously be trying to whip votes in the opposite direction very hard. So if out of these three parts that Paul Ryan has laid out, only one and two happen, is it good reform?
It's absolutely good reform. Obamacare is collapsing. I mean, it is collapsing, and the only way that it is going to survive is if they shore it up through this law. Through this law, you could face a prospect in 2018 of premiums being even higher than the 25% increase we saw this year. We could see even more companies dropping out. So this law is actually going to protect people. It's going to provide that lifeboat so people have a place to go for coverage while a new system is developed that actually can be sustainable. There were too many things about the Affordable Care Act that just did not work in our economic and political system. People gamed the system. There were so many ways in which people could use the system to help themselves but disadvantage the whole system. For example, purchasing health insurance, waiting to buy health insurance till they're sick. That doesn't work. That's not an insurance system, and that drove up the price for everybody. The more you do that, the more healthy people drop out. Charging young people three times more, five times more for health insurance, then the likelihood that they will use that care drove young people out of the market. They're the very people you need to stay insured in the event they have a major medical need, but they're not going to pay those premiums. They're not going to pay premiums that cost more than their rent, their mortgage payment, their student loans. They have to be able to have more choices. So giving people those choices, I think, is going to help, and it's absolutely needed. We need to pass this repeal and replace legislation to protect the people who most need it, including the extension of Medicaid until 2020. Governors were in Washington in late February, met closely with the president, with members of Congress, with staffers to really figure out how do we make sure this safety net holds, that we are going to be able to protect people on Medicaid. They said we have to have it go until 2020. There's a lot of opposition in the among conservatives. That's too long. The governors say that's what we need to be able to make this system work. So the conservatives may not like it, but we're not starting with a clean slate. We're starting with Obamacare, and we've got to figure out how do we protect people and then move toward a system that really does give people the kind of choice and more affordable coverage that they've been saying for years that they want.
You mentioned the system is collapsing, and this will be the last question. I'm sure you've heard the theory out there that perhaps the best move is to wait a year while Republicans still have the majority, and then once the new premiums and deductibles come out later this year and perhaps we get a forecast of what would happen later in 2018, people can see that this thing is absolutely imploding, and that'll give more public pressure to support the Republican plan. Others would say that's a dereliction of duty. You've got the numbers now. You need to deal with it. That's the responsible thing to do.
I would agree with the others because, I mean, the leadership of Congress, they're being statesmen here. Conservatives may not like it, but they're saying we have an obligation to people to protect them. If you waited a year, you would find that people in the middle of cancer treatment were losing their coverage because there's no insurer in their area to provide that coverage. They can't wait. This has to happen now, and thank heavens we have an opportunity to really be able to look at fundamentally this law and its problems and begin to develop a replace strategy right now. Plus, so that's the statesman part of this. Also, the process can't go forward. This is being passed through the 2017 reconciliation process. They can't do tax reform, which corporate America in particular is desperate for if we're going to be able to create jobs and enhance our international competitiveness. They can't get to that until they pass this. They have the debt ceiling coming up, and they have the confirmation of a Supreme Court justice coming up. So there are a lot of things that are backed up behind this. It seems like it's urgent, but in fact, they've been working on developing this legislation for 15 months since Speaker Ryan took office. This is not a fly-by-night thing. They've been meeting with members of Congress. They've been meeting with outside groups. They've been meeting with think tanks. They've been meeting with those who can help them develop a system that works. And I believe that this is the best they could come up with. It's not perfect. Nobody loves all of it. I don't love all of it. But I think it's the best they could come up with under the circumstances to get this through the House and to be able to move on with the rest of the agenda the American people care about, including jobs.
Grace Marie, we'll leave it there. Thanks as always for your time.
Thanks, Greg.
Grace Marie Turner, president of the Galen Institute. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.